Hi, this is Fred Cade, and I'm lucky today to be joined by Tom Julin. Tom is a partner in Hunton & Williams, responsible for the litigation with IMS that's been so involved in the marketing laws involving pharmaceutical information. And, of course, we just had argument on April 26th before the United States Supreme Court in Sorrell versus IMS Health, and we're glad to have the chance to talk with Tom today about what his perceptions were of that argument and what we might be thinking about as a decision coming out of the court later this year. So, Tom, why don't you just take a minute, if you will, and give us sort of the background. How did we get to the Supreme Court?
Well, Fred, it's been a fairly long road. It's been about 5 years' worth of litigation that started in New Hampshire, went on to Maine, and then wound up in Vermont challenging state laws enacted in each of those three locations. The laws basically prohibited pharmacies from continuing to sell prescriber identifiable information in prescription records to third parties that were then using it for marketing to pharmaceutical manufacturers. The laws were challenged on First Amendment grounds in each of the three states, and we got mixed results. The First Circuit upheld the laws, and the Second Circuit struck down the laws, so we had a circuit split, and the Supreme Court took the case in order to decide which side of the question it was going to come out on.
So was the argument on April 26th focused exclusively then on the First Amendment challenge?
It was focused on the First Amendment challenge. We had made Commerce Clause arguments in each of the three states, but that issue will not be addressed in this case. It will simply be looking at whether these laws violate the First Amendment.
And so is it fair to say that the IMS here and you had the burden of convincing the court that this was an impediment to speech as opposed to merely an impediment to accessing information?
Well, yes. I mean, there's certainly a debate that has occurred in the case about whether this is a free speech restriction at all or whether this is some sort of an access restriction. The state of Vermont wanted to characterize its law as simply restricting access to information, much similar to an exemption to the Freedom of Information Act restricts access to information. But our view has always been that pharmacies are private companies. They lawfully acquire information in the course of their business. And just as the state cannot impose a restriction on a newspaper, the state cannot impose a restriction on the speech of a pharmacy. The pharmacies have always wanted to sell the information because they think it's valuable information to have out there in the healthcare system, and we've always argued to the court that they should look at this as a prior restraint on the speech of a private entity.
So how did the justices respond to that argument?
Well, there were a lot of questions. I think that's the one thing that we can say. You can see from the press reporting about the argument that the press, I think, believes that the majority of the court was soundly in our corner. Of course, it's very difficult to predict anything from an oral argument, but the core group of conservative justices all seem to be very much focused on this as a restraint of speech, something that was trying to control the marketplace of ideas, and they generally seem pretty hostile to Vermont's approach to the case. The liberal side of the court, the Justice Sotomayor, Justice Breyer, Justice Kagan to some extent, although she didn't ask many questions, and Justice Ginsburg, they seem, I think, open-minded to looking at this question as whether it should be regarded as something of an access restriction rather than a restraint on speech. But in the end, I think that even the liberal wing of the court is likely going to see this type of a law as going too far in trying to control the speech of one side of the debate, that of the pharmaceutical manufacturers.
Well, I was reading excerpts from the case, and it seemed like at least the conservative majority on the court really seemed to be thinking of this case in terms of censorship. And in fact, that word seems to have appeared a number of times in the transcript. Is that a fair characterization, or was I just selectively reading what I wanted to see?
No, I think that was. How the argument went from the beginning, initially Chief Justice Roberts asked about what was the purpose of this law, and Justice Scalia picked up on that and really was, I thought, very aggressive in his trying to obtain an admission from Vermont that, yes, that they were really trying to censor the speech of the pharmaceutical manufacturers because the states don't agree with it. They don't like the fact that the manufacturers are advocating to doctors that they should prescribe more expensive drugs because the states then have to pay for those more expensive drugs. Our argument has always been what the states should do is present their cases to the doctors. They should try to remedy any imbalance of speech with their own speech, and that they cannot engage in that sort of censorship.
Was there any sense from the court, whether it's looking at this case under Central Hudson, the sort of intermediate commercial speech test, or whether they would be reviewing the test under reviewing the state statute under a higher strict scrutiny test?
You know, that's a good question. There was almost nothing about that in the argument and in the questions. They didn't really focus on whether this should be treated as a regulation of commercial speech or non-commercial speech, which was somewhat surprising because that has been a focal point of the debate in the lower courts, and obviously the Second Circuit decided this case by applying the Central Hudson test and concluding that Vermont failed to demonstrate that its law would survive that test. But I think the justices were much more focused on how to analyze this at a higher level in terms of, is this really a speech restriction? And then I think once they resolve that, they will then have to address, is this a commercial speech restriction or a non-commercial speech restriction?
Yeah, that would leave a lot unresolved if they had just decided the case without telling us the standard they used to decide it. What role, if any, did privacy play in this argument?
Vermont has really pitched the case as a privacy case, saying that their statute protects the privacy of both the doctors and patients. And a number of the amicus briefs really focus on the risk that patients' names could be re-identified, although the patients' names are taken out of these records. I don't think that any of the justices really saw this as a case that is going to be won or lost in that arena. I don't think that any of them saw this as a law that was really enacted to protect patient privacy or that there was any attempt by the state to justify it on those grounds. There were questions about prescriber privacy, but there was a lot of skepticism demonstrated by most of the justices about whether this really does protect privacy in any meaningful way, because it really does just stop the use of the information for marketing purposes. Information still can be disclosed, can be used for any sort of non-commercial purposes, research purposes. And so it's not really seen, I don't think, by the court as a pure privacy statute. It's more a statute that was trying to advance the state's economic objectives.
So at one point in the argument, Justice Ginsburg seems to have raised a question about who owned these records, and in fact drew a distinction, if I'm reading the transcript correctly, between prior commercial speech cases from the court in which she talked about commodities being involved and this one involving data or records. And I'm just curious, really, I guess two parts to this question. One, is that distinction a meaningful one? And two, does ownership of the records really matter to deciding this case?
I don't think the ownership of the physical records makes any difference. I think it's a question of who owns the information. And, you know, you see this in traditional tort areas when you're talking about appropriation of names, appropriation of likeness, and using one's name or likeness in the context of an ad. We all know that there is a common law tort of appropriation of names or likeness, and that common law tort survives any sort of First Amendment scrutiny. This, though, isn't that, and that's the problem, is that the Vermont is trying to create, in essence, a new form of privacy that's never been recognized, and trying to say, really, the prescribers own information about their prescribing histories. That's never been the law in any other state. Vermont's trying to extend it into that. And that's a very dangerous concept, because if you recognize that, a state legislature can create that sort of protection or ownership of information. And there's a lot of other information that states might say is owned by an individual about what he or she does. And that's what I think is so unnerving to many of the companies that are following this case, is that if you were to accept that sort of a rationale, it would give government a lot of leeway to enact lots of different forms of regulation on the idea that people own information about themselves.
Right, and I gather that a number of companies did join the argument as a MECI.
They did. There were 16 briefs filed on our side of the case, and there were 10 amicus briefs filed on the other side of the case. So there was very broad interest.
So the we expect the decision, I guess, by June?
Certainly by June 30th is the end of the Supreme Court term. This was the second to the last case that was argued in this term. And so my expectation is we will probably see a decision released in the last week of June.
All right. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Before I end this, I know you've been involved in this really longer than anybody, and you and IMS have worked together quite valiantly to defend the important interests at stake. Are there any last observations you would like to offer?
Yeah, you know, the case, I think, has great importance to the legislation that is now being considered to regulate Internet transactions. The Kerry McCain bill that has just been introduced in Congress is one that is trying to impose similar sorts of restrictions on what companies can do in terms of gathering information from Internet transactions. And so I think, you know, when this case is decided, it will have a very significant impact on how the constitutionality of legislation like that is viewed. If the court rules in our favor, then I think it's going to significantly restrict what Congress can do, although I suspect that the court will be careful to make the opinion as narrow as possible. But it certainly will give us some very good insights, I think, in terms of what Congress can and cannot do in terms of Internet regulation.
Well, Tom Julin, thank you very much. We appreciate your time, and we appreciate your hard work over the years, and we will all be waiting with our fingers crossed to hear a decision by the end of June. Marty, back to you.